Hall of Fame induction Sunday, and Carlos Beltran, one of the players who was inducted, goes in with a Mets cap on. And to talk about Beltran, how we remember him and his career, as well as the trade deadline, we bring in John Harper from SNY. Hey, John, how are you?
Good, Lori. How you doing?
I'm doing just fine. John, I wanted to turn to you because as somebody who has been covering New York baseball for a while, I'll pose to you the same question that I posed to our listeners and been talking a little bit about, which is, I just think Carlos Beltran is such an interesting and complicated figure in baseball. And there's so many different ways you can think about him and remember his career. So when I say to you, how will you remember Carlos Beltran, the ball player, what comes to mind first?
First for me, it's just his all-around ability that made him one of the best, you know, center fielders in baseball history, which I think he made him a slam dunk for the Hall of Fame, minus the Astros sign-stealing scandal, which for me, I penalized him 1 year of voting just because I thought that was significant enough. But the other part of that is I wish the relationship in New York had been better with the Mets fans. I think a lot of it goes back to the famous strikeout against Wainwright in the LCS, and some of the other stuff that went along there. I remember it was always felt like it was complicated. He Beltran could be a little bit sensitive to criticism. Remember, he wouldn't come out. He didn't want to come out for the curtain call at one point. Mm-hmm. His fans had been on him, been booing him. And it a lot of times while he was still here in New York, it didn't feel quite right. Didn't feel like he was maybe appreciated enough as he should have been. But some of that was on him too. And I think he has admitted that in recent months and stuff leading up to the Hall of Fame, that he takes some of the blame for that. So I always felt like it should have been a smoother career here. He was so good that it didn't always feel right in terms of his relationship with New York fans.
Yeah, I think some of it, I just remember defensively, he was a player who glided in center field. And I think at times made the sensational look routine, look easy. And because of that, because it was less of, I remember there were people like Jim Edmonds making plays where they were diving all over the place. And then you would see Carlos Beltran sort of gliding into catching a baseball. And I'm not sure if that was also the baseball IQ, the jumps, the anticipation of just knowing where the ball was going to go. But it always seemed like he made it look easier than it was. And I think that also was something with Mets fans, with baseball fans, that got him underappreciated. How would you react to that?
I think there's some truth to that. I think, as fans, I think we all love the guys with the dirty uniforms, the Backmans, the Dykstras, those guys going way back to the 86. And yeah, you're right. Beltran had a way of gliding, had a way of, he did kind of make it look easy at times. Even the way he ran the bases with a kind of a flair. I don't know if flair is the right word. Maybe a panache, is that the right word? He made it look easy at times, as you said. And sometimes those guys do go a little bit underappreciated. Robinson Cano, he wasn't the same type of player, but he did in different ways. He had the same kind of effect. I don't think he ran hard all the time. Beltran, I don't think that was an issue, but Cano did have a way of making it look easy in the same way. So I think sometimes those guys go a little bit underappreciated. But I think it all could have been different if they had won the championship in 06. I think it would have been a whole different story, and he would have been appreciated as a champion. And when he didn't do that, he became the guy that's strikes out. And even if he strikes out swinging in that final at bat instead of looking, I think even that changes the narrative a little bit. And, I saw it. A lot of fans held it against him, which seemed kind of kind of dopey because he's obviously, you know, he's not trying to strike out, but he got frozen by that curveball, and I think that just hung over him for a long time with fans.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that there are fans who think that had he just, I think it would have mattered had he, you know, it's almost that metaphor for life, for the person who leaves the bat on their shoulder versus you strike out trying, and it feels as right. if you almost didn't, that, you know, you didn't give it a chance, you didn't take that swing. But I think he's such an interesting study in contrast, in that we think about, you know, certainly as New Yorkers and Mets fans, there's that image seared on our brains of him standing there and getting struck out by what was an incredible curveball from Adam Wainwright, Game 7 NLCS. And yet, so we have this image of somebody who failed in a big time playoff situation, and yet he hit over 300, I think, in that series. And yeah. he, you know, if you go back to after he was traded from Kansas City to Houston, that first stint with the Astros is one of the best playoff, you know, kind of runs yeah. down to get into the playoffs, and then playoff performances in baseball history. Like, there was such yeah. a clutchness to his game, and postseason clutchness to his game. And yet the contrast that we have this memory of him, of this one epic time that he failed.
Yeah, I know. You're right. He had a big series in that series, and that 04 postseason yeah. was epic with the Astros. Yeah, it's funny. I mean, it can just be that one thing that sticks with fans. And again, you know, everything changes if they get through that somehow and they win the championship, or if they won the championship in another year, and if they hadn't failed, you know, falling apart in 07 or whatever. But then it just stuck with him, and then all the other stuff you mentioned kind of tends to build up into this narrative. And then he has some issues with the Mets in terms of the knee surgery he yep. ended up getting. The Mets didn't want him to get. There were some comments that the Mets were. Remember, he yep. they went to the Bethesda, Maryland Hospital, Naval Hospital, I think it was, to visit them, and he had a thing with his school in Puerto Rico or something like that. And he took offensive comments that somebody made. I can't really remember who was it. Somebody in the Mets organization. But there was all these little things, these slings and arrows, which I think he still holds against the Mets. And you know what? I think if Steve Cohen hadn't bought the Mets, if the Wilpons still on the Mets, I'm not sure that Beltran would have put the Met cap on for the Hall of Fame plaque. It might have been a different story, because there was a lot of bad blood there. And Steve Cohen, a lot of that went away because Steve Cohen made a point of welcoming Beltran back into the organization. You know, the whole manager thing notwithstanding, with that was a separate issue. But he has a lot of respect for the Cohens, and I think that helped convince him to put the Met cap on for the plaque, which is good, because that's where he probably did his best work overall as a Met, even though yep. he had some great years with Kansas City and some other teams.
Yeah. I think you're right that I said this earlier, that I think I know Mets fans are really angry at what a colossal failure this season is, but with Steve and Alex Cohen, I think there has been a healing. One of the positives has been, I think, a healing with Carlos Beltran and others. And I agree with you. I don't think he goes in with a Mets cap without that healing, without the Cohens doing what they're doing. Where would you place Carlos Beltran in terms of, again, when we think about how we will remember him and think about him, where is he in the ranking of all-time great Met position players? If we're looking at Daryl Strawberry, we're looking at Keith Hernandez, we're looking at David Wright, Mike Piazza. If it's all around games, offense, defense, base running, all of it, where would you rank? And, you know, look, you obviously have to have a certain number of years of your peak years with a team, but where would you rank Carlos Beltran in terms of all-time great Mets position players?
It's a tough question, because, again, I think you got to factor in the championships to some degree, and he didn't get it. At the same time, you know, Wright didn't get one either.
Yep.
I think I would put Wright ahead of him just because a little bit more longevity, even though it's too bad his career, you know, ended away. Well, he was on a Hall of Fame track as well. But in terms of longevity as a Met, and then other than that, I mean, you really have to put Beltran. I mean, it's hard to do the championships, you know, at a different measure to guys like Hernandez and Strawberry and Carter, and maybe Piazza belongs at the top as well because he was even though he didn't win one, he was there for a long time. And he's a Hall of Famer, but I got to put Beltran at the minimum in the top three for sure.
Yeah. Absolutely. Talk to John Harper from SNY about Carlos Beltran, about the trade deadline. And he said something earlier about that got me thinking about the current Met team. And with Beltran and his relationship with the fans and talking about how he was a sensitive human being, and some of that negativity, the relationship with the fans wasn't always positive. He might say now that some of that he brought on himself, but also, you know, some of the fans booing, all of that. Is there anything to be learned from Mets fans and the relationship with Carlos Beltran when we look at the current situation with Francisco Lindor?
Yeah, that's a good comparison. There are some similarities there. Lindor is a great player, but he led this team really in down the stretch in 24. He was clutch as could be, got them, you know, carried them really into the postseason and then to the LCS. Obviously, but there's a lot of other years there where he's been so inconsistent. And, you know, slow starter and all that, and then going all the way back to his first year here with the thumbs down thing with Baez.
Yep.
So it's a lot. It's complicated. It is a lot like Beltran. And you know, now who knows what's going to happen with Lindor. I mean, he's not going to be traded at this deadline, but I wouldn't be shocked if he's traded in the offseason. I believe the Mets are looking at everything, and they have to look. Actually, I think they should look at everything because it hasn't worked here. And I don't think it would be easy to trade Lindor because of his contract. But in the offseason, you might be able to convince somebody he has some good years left and he'd be a better player if he went elsewhere. Just like Beltran, I think Lindor is sensitive to everything that's being said around him and sensitive to criticism. He was obviously sensitive to the fans booing that first year here. So I think that's a really good comparison in a lot of ways, and it's going to be fascinating to see how it turns out because this team right now, who knows which direction it's going to go? It's been as bad as could be this year, but to turn it around, if he's going to be here, he's got to step forward and be the guy. I mean, he's had a weird year in terms of some of his mental and defensive mistakes, in addition to the slow start again offensively. He's got to be better than that. He's got to play like the superstar he is if he wants to be recognized as a great player with the Mets.
Yeah, strange as it sounds, with Soto now going on the injured list and being out for a while, and who knows if Soto will play again this season or, you know, when he'll play again, whether it's, you know, 6 weeks, 2 months, you know, next year. It's interesting. There is a vacuum of leadership and ownership of this team there now for Lindor, and maybe that will be a little more comfortable for him. With it's now your team. You know, nobody else around to carry this team. They're the young fellas, but they're looking at you, and so we'll see which version of Lindor steps up. All right. So when we look at the trade deadline, and let's start with. Interesting comments today from Freddie Peralta, who admitting that today was his last day. You know, it's not even like probably, maybe, or whatever. Like, today was Freddie Peralta's last game pitching as a Met. He's going to be traded. Everybody knows it. And, you know, him actually saying he feels like he let the organization down. What... Can you think of, you know, what went wrong here with the Mets and Peralta? And is it something where you can see him being traded to a contending team and boom, like flipping the switch and suddenly it's a different version of him?
I could see that, Lori. I mean, I think a lot of teams feel like it's still in there for him. And I think they probably, some contenders feel like they can fix him. I've talked to people who believe that there's some mechanical issues. You know, one of his great strengths was he had this elite extension, which creates this perceived velocity, which just means the ball gets on hitters quicker than they feel like they see it. And then that's why he was so good pitching at the top of the zone and getting so many swings and misses with his fastball. He hasn't gotten as much this year. I've seen some videos side by side of him compared to last year and even years before that. And he's more upright, I guess, this year. Although his arm angle is lowered, all this stuff is mechanic related and could be fixed in terms of finding that extension back. Now, who knows if that's true, but I know there's people that feel that way. So I think that's why somebody will take a chance on him. I mean, I know a couple of people I've talked to recently have said, well, you know, just look at Peterson. He's been pretty good for the Cubs. He had one bad start. He's had three good starts for them. And I haven't heard anybody say for sure if he's something that obviously stands out that he's doing different. But there's some feeling maybe the Mets aren't doing their best work with some of these pitchers. You know, they changed pitching coaches, obviously. Hefner went out. Justin Willard came in. He's an analytics guy. So I think there are a lot of questions about whether or not they're getting the best out of their guys. And that's why I do think they'll get – I don't think they'll get the kind of prospect they were hoping for even a month ago for Peralta, but I think they'll get something to make it worthwhile to trade him anyway.
You mentioned the new pitching coach, and there was obviously a complete turnover, almost a complete turnover of the coaching staff in the offseason amongst all the changes that David Stearns made from last year to this year. And is there a sense around, first of all, when they do the Mets bring in a new manager for next season, I assume, but you tell me, but are you hearing, is the assumption that with that new manager, there will again be a largely, new turnover again of the Mets coaching staff?
You know, I don't think anybody knows that for sure. I think it could be some of these same guys are back. I don't know if it's going to be the manager's call. I think it depends who it is. If it's an Alex Cora that they bring in, I think he's going to have a lot of say in who his coaches are. If it's somebody like Beltran, you know, a first time manager, he may not have as much say, and he may rely on Stearns and an organization to pick the coaches. And in that case, I mean, I really don't know what the organization feels about Willard's performance, but they may look at him and say it's not his fault that they like the way he goes about his business, and they bring him back. I think if you bring in an established manager, it could be a different story. But that's going to be fascinating as well, who they end up with as the manager and the coaching staff. I do think they made a big mistake this year by, you know, if you're going to bring back the manager, you bring back Mendoza and you take all of its coaches out and bring in all new coaches, in addition to all the turnover on the roster, I think that was a big mistake. Mendoza needed a little bit more support there in terms of the coaching staff.
Yeah, you're either changing, if you're changing the entire coaching staff, just go ahead and change the manager make the change. But you can't change the entire coaching staff and keep the manager, especially when you've had a poor season the year before. So now everybody thinks he's on the hot seat with a completely different coaching staff and without that support. You know, in hindsight, as we look at it, that just wasn't a smart decision.
Right.
Should we assume that for purposes of this trade deadline, everyone who is basically like anyone who's not, you know, anything that's not nailed down is going off in a sale, furniture sale. But so everyone who is a free agent, a pending free agent, everyone who doesn't have club control beyond this year, should we assume that all those players are being traded?
Well, they're going to be shopped, that's for sure, and they're going to be traded if they can get something worthwhile for him. I would think most of them will be traded. I know there's a lot of talk now. I guess Holmes, it sounds like, you know, they haven't had any, they haven't gained any ground toward an extension. I still think, I don't understand why they're going to trade him. They need pitching. He's great for them. If you can work out an extension, which he said publicly a couple weeks ago he'd be willing to do, you don't have to get the extension done by the trade deadline. You can go ahead and work on that after the trade deadline. If the trade deadline stuff is getting in the way right now, I think you should try and find a way to bring him back, because he has an opt-out, so he's going to opt out after this year, even though he has another year on his contract. I would try to bring him back, but there's also going to be a lot of interest in him because he was so good. And it's not an arm injury he's coming back from, it's the broken leg. So I think it sounds like he'll be traded. And then, all the other suspects are obvious. The relievers are pretty obvious. Weaver's interesting because he's got a year of control. But I would trade him because he's so up and down in his career. And right now you're selling at a high for him. You could probably get something, pretty good for him. So I would try to do that. Then the lefties, Raley and Minter, Peralta, and then Holmes. And then, there was more talk about today, Tyrone Taylor. He's a free agent as well.
Yep.
I don't think you're getting much for him.
I know. I think he'd be great for the Yankees, by the way, in a package. I was saying earlier, how about packaging him with, like, Brooks Raley or something? And, it might not be an elite prospect you're getting back if you're the Mets, but package a couple guys, get something decent back.
I think if you're a contender, I'd want Taylor on my team. As an extra, not necessarily as a starter, but he has so much value as a defender in the outfield. He's a great defender. He runs well. And, in his Met career, he's gotten a lot of big hits for a guy that doesn't put up big numbers, So I just feel like he'd be kind of a perfect guy on a contender as an extra guy off the bench. So, but those kind of guys, at the same time, you're not going to get a top prospect for a guy like that. But yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to see somebody like the Rays or the Brewers or one of those teams figure out a way to bring him in their lineup or their roster and add him, because I feel like he's a guy to help you win games, especially in October.
Well, if it's the Rays or the Brewers, then we know he's going to suddenly, not forever, but for a couple of months, he'll turn into a star. if he's on one of those teams. All right, Harp. So if we're switching to the Yankees, first of all, strategically, is this the year for the Yankees? If you're advising Brian Cashman, is this the year to go all in at the trade deadline?
I think it is. They say they're all about championships. If they're all about championships, they haven't won one in a long time. Assuming Judge is coming back at some point, again, we talked about this for the last few years now. Judge is getting to the outer edge of his prime. Cole, you're getting to the outer edge of his prime. How many more years are you going to have those guys at this level? I think it is time to go for it. You have a team that can win. Obviously, you have a strong starting staff, but you need some pieces. I'm not sure they can get Mason Miller, but unless they think Lombard is ready to come up and really be a factor this year in the next month or so and be their shortstop in the postseason, then I would, if you could get Mason Miller for Lombard, I'd do it.
If you're trading Lombard though, and you're going for that, wouldn't you be looking for, I've thrown it out for a few weeks now, but somebody like a CJ Abrams, if that's possible. If you're gonna start talking about Lombard, then why not put together a package and go for that impact bat that this team so badly needs?
You could do that. If you got a healthy team, though, I'm not sure you need it. I mean, I know they're sporadic at times offensively, but if you got Judge and Rice and Bellinger and even a guy like Caballero, I think you're getting something out of him. Abrams has he has kind of a spotty reputation. That's the only issue with him. He was disciplined by the Nationals last year, the year before, for reasons that weren't clear. But there's been a feeling that he's not a guy that plays 100% all the time. So I don't know. That might be dicey. He does have a lot of talent. So, you know, it feels like it'd be a little bit of a gamble bringing him in there. If you're getting a guy like Miller, you're just getting a lockdown guy to put in there at the Bednar in the late innings. To me, the ultimate guy, you know, I'd go ahead and try and get Scoobal and add him to the rotation. Then you can just win with pitching. But I'm not sure the Tigers are actually going to trade him. You know, they need a catcher, so maybe this guy Jeffers from the Twins, maybe mm-hmm. you can get him. I know. I think ideally they could use another bat. I'm just not sure where it's coming from. I mean, Abrams is certainly an interesting guy. Other than that, it seems like they're on a lot of good options. That Red Sox trade was kind of interesting, picking up the guy Mead from Nationals. I didn't realize he's having a really good year. So there are probably some guys out there you don't think of automatically, but I would think if you're going back to your original question, if you're Cashman, you're doing everything you can. If you think Lombard is ready, listen, they've held out for guys like Volpe and other guys in past years, and it didn't pay off for them. I think you got to go all in and try and win it this year.
I do. I think that as long as you think that Aaron Judge is coming back ultimately by September.
Yeah, that's a big part
healthy,
of it. Yeah.
And by healthy, it doesn't mean he has to play the outfield, but healthy enough to DH and bat the way he can. If you think that, then especially with next season being such a question mark and Judge only going to get older, and the American League being so poor and such a open, wide, down year, this has to be the year, and he has to go for the kill shot, whatever he thinks that is. John yeah. Harper from SNY. Really, really appreciate the time and the perspective on Carlos Beltran. We'll catch up with you soon.
All right. Thanks, Lori. Great talking to you.